Hey, before we start the show, big shout out to Steve Tester. It was nice seeing you the other day.
Remember the 5th of November, the gunpowder treason and plot. I know of no reason why the gunpowder treason should ever be forgot. But what of the man? I know his name was Guy Fawkes, and I know in 1605 he attempted to blow up the Houses of Parliament. But who was he really?
Fake ID works better than a Guy Fawkes mask. This is FilmSack. Oh, sure.
Hello, everybody, and welcome back to FilmSack. This is FilmSack, mining the very depths of film entertainment for all mankind. I'm Scott Johnson, and this is episode 377. Joining me today, Brian, his face is like a peppermint... Sorry, that's wrong. Brian, his face is like a permanent smile as well done away.
I like the where he was going with the peppermint.
Peppermint smile.
If you ever, licked my face, you'd know. Ooh, he tastes like peppermint. Oh, hi.
Hi.
This week on F for FilmSack, we tackle the Wachowskis' 2005 foreign film, B for Bollocks. Fine, it was B for Vendetta. A film, to the best of my understanding, about the letter V. I mean, not since that infamous episode of Sesame Street where Cookie Monster smoked a J and confused Ernie for a life-size Milano have I had such an overbaked idea expressed on screen. Oh, sweet hairy top cookie. Nom, 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 nom. Hey, Bert, a little help here. Yeah, it's just a big old bag of bollocks. Now I yield my remaining time to Randy.
Man, you got a Sesame Street thing in there? That's amazing.
Sesame Street is the letter V.
I know, but I didn't see it coming. It's really good. Speaking of which, also with us, Randy keeps all his special notes in a toilet. Jordan.
That's true. Aloha, Scott. Brian.
Aloha.
Aloha, Randy.
Recall, someday in the fall, to listen if you're so inclined. I see no wit by which this film shit should ever slip one's mind. Let's try that again. Dwell upon what you just fell upon like a film that's a grenade. I see no cause to not ponder its flaws and ask, how did this ever get made?
Oh, man.
I'm just kidding. I stopped.
Yeah.
You know, that was really good rhyming, but I do not agree with the sentiment. We'll get to that in a minute. Hey, Finally, Brian, he's like a British Alex Jones Ibbot.
He is. Hooray, I'm not going to do the mask on my face. Hooray, hooray, it's the middle of May. Allow me to introduce myself. My moniker is M. Can I get you a mint? Are millennials making a mockery of Martin Mull? Did Melissa McCarthy mind meld with Michelle Monaghan? Must I master the multitudes of machinations involved with making a monologue where every mutterance begins with an M? You sure I can't get you a mint?
I can't believe you squeezed Martin Mull in there somehow. Amazing.
I actually understood every reference you made. Not one of the references did I get in his monologue.
I have two things I want to make sure we start with. One, Scott, it's episode 378. Please, in your notes.
Are you sure?
Every week. Every week, Scott proclaims tweets at us.
Well, on the site, it says, I got to check that because I swear it says 370 something.
The new site, you mean?
You know what? Technically, it's actually 379 today.
Okay, whatever.
379. All right, 379.
Remember the episode number.
I do that all. It's only this show I get it screwed up on it. I don't know why, but anyway. What was your other thing there, Randy?
Can we start with what do people know about the history of England? Because I think there is something to this where as soon as we started watching it, one of the four of us was like, I don't know what the hell they're talking about. And like, I wonder, I wonder how much of an American audience is in that same boat. I don't know, but I'm guessing it's a significant fraction.
Well, I went into this movie in 2005, I knew a little bit about the Guy Fawkes thing and that rebellion and all that. But I mean, I didn't know a lot of specifics, but I think the movie does a fine job of saying, here's Guy Fawkes in 16, whatever. He's in trouble for this. He was, you know, his words matter because there's still people out there that went, oh, you know what? He was right, even though he died for it. Like, that's all on the page here. It's not.
Well, yes. However, that I agree. But I already knew about Guy Fawkes thing. That didn't trip me up. The actual very few couple of like 2 minutes that they recanted that story. Redid the story. I'm like, that's fine. I get that.
Yeah.
However, it's when they start naming. They start saying Creedy, but they're saying it in a way that I can't understand. That's not a common name in American language. And he starts going through all these different locations that are in England that I'm not really familiar with. And I'm kind of like, what'd they say? What word was that? And then they call something like they were talking about United States of America, but they called it something else. And it's like, I don't know what words were those.
Did you not realize that you were in the future?
Right, like first? 5 minutes in the future. Yeah, I didn't realize that either. Matter of fact, I didn't realize a lot of things. Like, I didn't understand who she was supposed to be. Like, I was like, what is she supposed to be? She's wearing a trench coat. Is she involved? Is she not involved? Is she a streetwalker? Is she just a lady? Is she, because you couldn't see anything because they had like they had like little clues in the background, but we were so close in on them. I didn't know what the crap was going on. I'm like, I'm confused.
There were a lot of things that were post-explained, like the curfew. Yeah. Like, you wondering why she, you know, what's the problem with her walking around at night? And why is she all of a sudden, you know, like, worried about somebody catching her walking around out at night? I'm with you, Brian. I've seen this movie. This may be the third or fourth time I've seen the movie. Saw it the first time in the theaters, and I actually own it on DVD and watched it as soon as I bought it. But I still... there were a couple things I'm like, oh yeah, now wait a minute. What's the story with the watchdogs or the finger police or whatever they're called? I did have to pull up Wikipedia and look at the first paragraph of plot just to like it myself. Previously on V for Vendetta. Yeah. But funny because I read the comics too.
Yeah.
Right.
I didn't want to get into the whole show just to ask this question. I mean, like, we have Scott Fletcher and we need to actually talk about the movie.
Right.
But it's like the question is the movie accessible to everybody? And Brian Dunaway was saying before he even finished watching it that there was a level of accessibility it was missing.
Well, it just gives to turn that brain on there, Jimmy John, and let's the
it is practically like a different language when you're talking about when I say Detroit, boom, you immediately start getting images of what Detroit is, what it means historically in storytelling. You have
Lions
all
and Tigers.
This, yeah, you have all this attachment to it as a US viewer. However, if you go to another country and you mention a location, if I'm not familiar with, you know, what the backstory is behind that, I'm immediately going, why is that important? What does that mean?
Yeah, but there's all kinds of movies like that. It's basically the definition of a cold open. Like, we're getting a cold open that isn't supposed to make all the sense yet. It's just supposed to be compelling and go, oh, interesting. That's weird.
Fine. It's fine if the cold opening is that. But when someone speaks your language, but with a different, a different accent.
Frame of reference is the thing.
Point. Yeah, to a point that I'm not sure if they're saying a person's name or if they're saying a location. And I'm like, then that's worse than a cold opening. Then I'm just like, what the hell is going on? And not in a good way, like, oh, you have my curiosity peaked. More like, I don't even know what I'm looking at right now. You might as well be two gerbils dancing right now. I have no idea what the hell is going on.
And that, I think that actually goes to this really interesting question of whether or not we're really speaking the same language. I have struggled with it a lot over the years since I started working at a company where we have this global presence and we have employees all over the world, because we work in two Englishes. We have US English and Great Britain English.
The King's English.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And we regularly, I've known so many people who have been working in Europe and they come to the United States and they're like, what are all of these words? And vice versa. And you come to realize you know what? You might think of British English as the original, but it's now dwarfed by the number of speakers who aren't speaking it. It's about 5-1 around the world who are more versed in American English than British English. Mm. And so it's actually become a bit of a minority, and it's a struggle for people. For people who grow up in England and then leave there, they're really frustrated by that fact, you know?
Right.
And so, but like this movie has things like references to cities in England. And if you don't know them, you like, if I say right. Manchester, for instance, if you know about England, you know, that's the North and it's a different dialect. And
that's where the Smiths come from.
Right.
You might know Man United and Manchester City Football right. Club and this kind of thing. But if you don't, I've said nothing. I've just made a name come out of my mouth, and you have no reference.
I've actually heard totally Manchester, true. And I've heard it spoken in an American English way, but it would be like this. Add additionally to that, not only did you just say Manchester, but you said Manchester, and I'm like, what the hell did he just say?
Manchester.
Because I can't put that together.
Yeah. Well, listen, we can't all be quicker
brilliant
on their feet like
Johnson.
Me. Yeah. No, I mean, I agree. I kind of agree with a lot of what you're saying. I just found it compelling and I wanted to learn more. So things I wouldn't like first viewing, hearing a lot of stuff like that, I'd go, ooh, okay, well, I'm sure this is going to make sense later. And I'm into whatever that is. That guy just kicked their asses in that alleyway. So let's go. And so it never slowed me down or made me, you know, want to restart or quit or anything right. like that. And I have a feeling, well, here, Fletcher, have your way with this, and then we'll be right back.
V for Vendetta. In a future British tyranny, a shadowy freedom fighter, known only by the alias of V, plots to overthrow it with the help of a young woman.
Yeah, that's basically it. I think they undersold the young woman part, but okay, whatever. All right, so...
Not until she dressed up in her little skimpy outfit, and you're like, oh, a young woman, I get it
yeah,
now.
Where's
by the way...
Pervy little, priest, yes.
Right. I just want to say one more thing. It did take me a little time to get into the movie. Like, the first 20 minutes, I had to rewind a lot, had to turn on closed caption. Once you get past that initial cold opening, the rest of it seems to make pretty good sense, and it starts to fill up pretty good. It tripped me up really hard. And that was unfortunate because I
and
didn't
I also,
feel...
it also made me want to ask, did you ever read the book?
Yes.
It a long time ago?
Yeah.
Was it fairly recent?
It was like back in 89 or 90 that I read it. It was a long time
ago. I never read the book. I know what the book is. I know what it's about. But I have never read the books. I've seen some pages. I've seen the artwork, but I've never read proper.
Yeah.
No.
Just for, if you're sitting at home and you're like, I'm about to watch this movie because I'm listening to this podcast and I haven't read the book either. I'm going to put in the FilmSack Twitter feed a link to the version that I think is the one you should look at. Consider reading it. It came out in 2008, and it's a paperback, hardback paperback. There's like a middle ground.
Oh,
you guys
it's
ever noticed?
Reprint. It is a reprinting of. It's not like a new version or anything.
It's not a new version. Just the one that I would suggest you get. Which you can get for nothing because of Amazon, right?
Oh, I was going to say. Oh, and don't forget the fact that it's got Randy's Amazon affiliate ID in there, so that he gets 18 cents for every person who buys it.
You know what? I'm getting it that way because I respect Randy.
Yeah.
And I thank Randy for giving me this information.
Yeah.
No, I'm gonna put Brian Dunaway's link in there because he's the one who's made a living, right? He's made so much money.
I'm gonna buy it on Rakuten.com then, just to screw with everybody or whatever
anyway,
their name
there's
is now.
There's a really good version, a really good printing, I want to say, of the Alan Moore David Lloyd V for Vendetta book. And by the way, we need to mention David Lloyd. It's a well drawn book.
It's all that the movie does, by the way. In the credits, they do not mention Alan Moore, and I'm sure it's because of some deal where he says, "Strike my name from your damn production. I hate all movies on my work." Blah blah blah. I know he's got that history, but at the end it says based on characters drawn by David Lloyd, and then there's no mention of Alan Moore.
That's right.
Which really bums me out.
Off that junk.
Yeah, and I understand
it. By the way,
but it bums me out. Yeah.
That paperback, the 2008 one, for basically 14 bucks. Is that the one you're looking at?
You can get it for like $3, man.
Oh wow. Okay. Oh, used. Okay, used. If you spend 22, you get the paperback and the mask.
If you use my affiliate link and then buy two.
Oh, then I could be, I could pretend like I'm part of Anonymous or something.
Yeah, but you don't get the Anne Hathaway wig.
Oh, that, that's too bad.
That is
darn
great.
It.
Anyway, I never thought of that. That is a great wig, isn't it?
It really is a great wig.
Yeah.
I had the original comic, and it's flimsy and it fell apart and it wasn't, I don't think it was well printed on the cover, et cetera. Mm-hmm. And this is way good. Like, I also have this one and it's really sturdy. And I think it's the one to get. If you've never read this thing, you should. And by the way, I disagree with Alan Moore, as though that I'm allowed to do that. He is absolutely wrong. This movie follows the book very nicely.
I agree.
And it doesn't take away from his work in any way. No, I don't know where that is.
His is a flat problem, isn't it? Isn't it? He doesn't care. Yeah, any of his work gets done.
Right.
He wants
true,
nothing
yes.
to do
it's
with
like,
it.
I don't want anything of mine turned into movies, but. His big issues with it were that it took it out of the 90s and moved it into the future.
Sure. Yeah.
But what do you, you can't just, nah.
I agree with that. What I'm saying is I agree with,
Randy
with, no, I agree with Scott. You definitely have to take it in the future.
Yeah.
And then there's, other problems he didn't like, Evie in the comic is, basically has to turn to selling her body, basically turns into a prostitute.
She's 16 is all in the book.
See, that would have made sense to me because then I would have known what the hell she was doing out.
Well, I mean, she was just walking around out. Like she wasn't.
Exactly. But I need a reason for if she's going to be breaking curfew. I need a reason for breaking curfew. It apparently has something to do with her piece of paper she has on her because she looks at it, but you can't read anything on it. And then she takes off and she's wearing some kind of she's got a bad perm and a. And she's got on a trench coat. And I'm like, is she a flasher? What is she doing right now? Is it cold outside? Doesn't appear to be cold. What is going on?
I don't understand. That scene to me was so easy to understand. She's just out after curfew. She's out after curfew. These weirdos in the street stop her. She doesn't know who they are at first. She resists. Then they show her that they're part of the secret police or whatever the hell they are there.
And then some dude busts up with the dictionary and says, here's every word in the dictionary that's under V.
Yeah. And then he kicks their A, but, and then he saves her, and then she's compelled. Like, that's not – I don't know how any of that's hard. That all seems real
And it's actually over-explained later. Stephen Fry over-explains this whole thing. And that's the thing. Like, movies do this all the time, and I'm surprised it really tripped you up, like where they don't tell you what's going on until later.
Mm-hmm. Right. I think because we've gotten so used to movies not doing that. That was a thing that it's a lost art of film that you have movies where you go in and instead of getting a thing at the beginning that says, in the beginning there was a war and it wiped out a third of the population of blah blah blah, and then the big moles came and
let me tell you about the baggage I brought into this movie. First of all, I know it's the Wachowskis, so I'm like, please don't be the architect. Please don't be the architect. Please don't.
Damn it, Speed Racer.
It's the architect.
The architect. Oh, you mean like from the Matrix? You mean?
Oh, the Colonel Sanders architect.
V is absolutely the architect. He talks around in circles all day long. And it's like we get your simple idea, and now you just spend 30 minutes talking about it because the idea, the brilliance of the idea of the original story is that an idea turns into a superhero.
Yeah, but that's not the Wachowskis writing that or anybody else. That's just comic.
That's the reason why I don't give them the credit.
No, I mean, the comics, I mean, they were producers here and co-writers, but they're adapting material and the director's not them. It's somebody else who went on to do one of the bloodiest movies I ever saw, Ninja something. We should watch that on here.
Oh, James McTeague.
Turtles 2, Attack of the Ninja.
Yes, episode 2, Attack of the Clones.
Ninja.
Most gory movies ever.
Something Ninja. Anyway, I forget.
But Ninja Assassin.
Ninja Assassin, that's it. But so this just feels like a careful adaptation to me. And I appreciate it for that. And it's had enough cultural impact. And this would be twice now that Wachowski helmed or at least associated movies have done that. The Matrix was hugely influential to a larger culture. I don't just mean in films, but like, you know, there was that whole thing. Everybody's wearing trench coats now and everybody, you know, like that whole thing that the Matrix did. And this, that Guy Fawkes mask whole thing, the entirety of the supposedly benevolent worldwide hacker group Anonymous, they're all wearing those masks because of this thing. Like, it's by the way, it's a big deal. It's weird how they have that impact, is all I wanted to say.
Anybody else looking to see if the mask ever changed? Because I was the whole movie.
Okay, so there's some trivia about this. In the book, David Lloyd's art changes depending on the scene. So the face does subtly change. Really? It's not like crazy changes. It's not like he's suddenly frowning or, you know, mouth open or something, but it changes in a kind of a subtle way that would be more like Spider-Man's expression changing.
Kind of like the Rock, can you smell what the Rock is cooking? Yeah. One eyebrow up kind of thing.
Kind of like that, but not, but subtle enough where it doesn't feel cartoony. And they tried, they were going to do that for the movie, it says, but they was just too much of a pain to get all the lighting right. And then the masks were different. And so they just decided just to have the one mask. But yeah, I look for it. But to answer your question, Randy, yes, I was always looking for subtle changes on that thing. And in my memory, for some reason, it's been some years since I saw it last, but I thought the mask came off at some point and he showed his like nasty burnt face. And I don't know why I think that.
There's one, you get a glimpse.
You get his hands.
Oh no, I guess you just see it when a little bit of it when he comes out of the fire.
When he comes out of the fire in the flashback they keep having, we have an idea of what his face may look like. And I think it's all
silhouette-y, and maybe that's what I'm doing. I'm conflating that. But it did seem like they were in a room. In my memory, they're in a room someplace and he takes it off very briefly and then she kisses him to show that she's not as scared of this thing.
I'm not as scared of this. Give me the kisses.
But that never happened. Instead, she just kissed plastic, which is fine, I guess. Or
according to my room, they went no.
I was disappointed by that kiss. I felt like it was very unfulfilling. But I guess it was meant to be, right?
Yeah, it is. It's supposed to be like
only
this,
get so close.
Yeah, this forbidden barrier. This will never truly be anything more than a thought. But I also like the idea that she's playing older in this and not 16, because that's creepy. I don't need that in my life. Right. But so we should just get this out now. I really like this movie, like a whole lot, and I don't really have too many flaws to say about it. Like, it's going to be hard for me to come up with too many criticisms. So, and I know that previous to us getting on here today and being on the air, we were talking a little bit back and forth on Slack and stuff. And it seems to me that maybe there's a bit of a divide. I think Ibbot and I are basically on the same page.
Yeah, I've enjoyed this a lot more than I expected to. I remember liking the film, and it's like, oh yeah, I really, really like this film.
Yeah,
I like the way it's delivered. And I remember loving the graphic novel, and I'm going to have to look and see if I actually own the graphic novel before I follow Randy's link and buy a copy. But just that powerful scene of her standing in the rain, which comes a little bit different in the movie than it does in the comic. Like, basically, when she walks out of the cell, she walks out into the rain and realizes that she's free.
Mm-hmm. She's born of rain. He's born of fire. I thought all these symbolic. I thought it was beautiful. I liked the movie too. Yeah. Scott got me wrong. I said I was pissed because the cold opening was a little too cold. And I couldn't figure out what the hell was going on. Mm. And I was like, is it me as an audience member? Because this movie was made for the U.S. It wasn't made for, you know, other countries. Did they go too far trying to give me an authentic dialogue I was unable to connect to?
I think
there wasn't
that
enough bridge.
I understand what you're saying, but I'm not going to say. I don't think this movie was made for just U.S. audiences. In fact, I mean, well, I don't know how far back we can go to say this, but I think movies are always made for international audiences, and this stuff just gets
much more today.
Well, especially today, yeah. Like, if you make an Avengers movie, that feels like you're making it for me, but you're really making it for China.
Right.
Because that's where all the money comes from. But in this particular case, like, I do have one complaint. The big distraction for me was, I think Natalie Portman's one of the great actresses working today. I think she's amazing, and I love watching her in anything. So, I think she even elevated those Star Wars prequels. She's better. Those movies are slightly better because she's in them. Yeah. So I already really like her, but her affecting as far as I can tell, is a very accurate, good accent, a very good, you know, English accent.
Let's go to the internet and see what they think about her accent.
But I just don't know if, or because I go in knowing that she's not from that part of the world, and that I know she's having to make up the accent, I have to. My brain had to kind of reset on that and kind of get used to it and forget.
I was thinking about that too, but I don't know what her. I know what she sounds like when she's doing interviews and stuff, but she's of the same land as Gal Gadot, right? She's
no.
Israeli?
No.
Yes, she is Israeli by birth, and but raised here, I want to say.
But okay, yeah, say where she raised.
But when we say of the same, we're talking about where did you get your accent? Where were you raised? Where were you educated?
Okay, she was raised in America. I was wondering if
foreign don't matter.
I think she was raised here, but we should probably look. And maybe it was maybe she jumped around, but I want to say she was mostly raised here, whereas Gal Gadot was mostly raised around voices that
in a lab.
Yeah. Yeah, she's
have
a little
ever,
too perfect.
Have you guys ever watched there's a YouTube channel? And there's a guy, he does nothing but analyze linguistics for movies. He breaks them down. It's a lot of fun.
Oh, interesting.
I'll have to pull it up. Yeah, he talks about the different accents and stuff in movies. It's really good. But I don't know if you ever did Beef for Vendetta.
It's weird because it doesn't actually bother me when it's the reverse. If somebody's, at least if they're good at it, if somebody in the UK or Australia is affecting an American accent in a movie, which happens all the time. Mm-hmm. I don't even like the Spider-Man from the Avengers movies and Spider-Man movies.
Yeah,
now.
Right.
Holland is as Tom British Holland, as it gets, but he does a great American accent. And then even when I go in knowing that, doesn't bother me. Christian Bale doesn't bother me. These guys, it's not an issue. But going the other way for some reason throws
it is
me
a little distracting. Yeah.
Yeah, and I don't know why, but it just is. It's weird.
I did look up the Natalie Portman timeline. Her parents were Israeli and specifically went to Jerusalem to birth her so that she would have dual citizenship.
Yeah.
But she grew up in Washington, D.C., Connecticut, and New York City.
Yeah, that makes sense.
All right. Show us the birth certificate, Natalie Portman.
Yeah.
I know it.
She's awesome. I freaking love her, but it did take me a minute. But after a while, I was fine.
That was the thing. Like, to go to Brian Dunaway's point, I actually felt like the movie was trying there. Like so many films do, where they, for inexplicable reasons, are set in England, about an English story, and cast an American right in the middle of it. I don't know why they would ever do this. I am totally with all of my Englishmen friends who are like, this is stupid and it ruins.
Yeah, but you don't have you don't have a problem with what's his name? Who's playing? Agent Smith. Can't think of his real name. All of a sudden,
Hugo Weaving
playing a British person. He's playing a British person. He's Australian.
No, totally.
Don't have a problem with Bemberdick Slumberbutch playing Doctor Strange, who's an American.
I kind of do there, but that's a completely different subject. I'm saying I have spent my whole life making fun of Harrison Ford saying the Millennium Falcon, and I can't take that back now. It's not.
You don't know what the Corellian accent is.
I know that Harrison Ford doesn't naturally speak it, whatever it is.
Right.
Anyway, it doesn't matter. It's she does a fine job. And by the way, I really enjoyed this movie, Scott.
Good.
I was so happy watching this movie. I realized I have seen it, but I didn't remember seeing it at all.
Except for the
train. The train I remembered 100% about, but everything else.
Oh, the train with the explosives in it and all that.
Because it was dumb, or because you liked it, or what?
Oh, that's not dumb at all. That was awesome. I mean, there's no way that thing blows the thing up the way it blew it up, because that thing was obviously wired for a bunch of stuff, but I didn't care. That was very comic book. I loved it. And all the music, just having it all blow apart. Ah, so satisfying. Yes. And all those guys. I mean, there are so many questions you could pick and nitpick at this, like, where'd you get all the masks? Did you mail them all from one place? Did they not? You know, like, there's all kinds of questions, but I don't care.
How much did that cost? FedExing all those masks?
Well, all he had to do is sell one piece of priceless art to raise that money. The guy is very, very wealthy in art.
The only break I really had, or I still kind of have a question about, and I know that they were, I don't know if they're what they're trying to do with me here, but when he had the show with Stephen Fry. There you go. Stephen Fry's doing, as far as I know, he's just talking about Sackboy all the time because he narrates those big, little Big Planet games. But anyway, he's got his little comedy show there, and he brings out two of them, but two dudes that look like the emperor or the whatever, the high chancellor.
Oh, yeah, the chancellor. Yeah.
And he brings out
dual chancellors. Dueling chancellors.
Yeah, and it's totally him playing him.
Yes.
Sir. what I could, that threw me, because all I was thinking was, well, wait, how did you get in such an exact copy with the voice and everything? Like, I'm still a little weirded out by that. Like, I don't know if it was supposed to be a technology thing, or was that supposed to be just...
I think it was supposed to be, in the future, we're able to make an actor look so much like the guy that we could...
It was
we
its face swap. Like, face swap technology.
But they also went out of their way to do some things. I don't know if you noticed, but John Hurt's face in that sequence.
Yeah, it was all like makeup skin.
He had like he had a ton of extra makeup on for some reason.
Yeah.
And I actually thought that was really great.
It's cool. It just threw me because I couldn't. It was highly at first I thought, oh, it's him. Wait, how did they get him? And then it got crazy and then it got shot. And I'm like, well, that's obviously not him. And then I'd forgotten that they came and got Stephen Fry later, so all that stuff made sense. But
we all loved John Hurt in this film, right? Loved him.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay. Oh, I love that guy.
I love the giant Big Brother style, you know, head on a screen. I always wonder how, like, is he just looking at a little video camera or video, like a screen showing all of them, or does his webcam Skype setup move to the different faces of whoever's talking?
Yeah,
because you never see him look like slightly to the right to talk to Creedy or slightly to the left to talk to this guy.
He's using Google. He's using Google Talk, because that way it switches automatically, so everything's fine.
I don't know. I felt like a little bit of lazy. I like it was looking at everybody. I just go ahead.
Yeah,
I just wanted to ask if you know who my favorite is, though, because John Hurt wasn't my favorite thing in the movie.
No,
interesting. Stephen Rea is probably your favorite, right?
I have to give it to Roger Allam as the Fox News talking head.
Oh, that guy. We just saw him in Speed Racer, too.
Fox News? Did you say?
Yes, exactly.
Guy Fox News?
Seriously, though, I heard that was one of Roger Moore's complaints about the film, was that it was rephrased.
Roger
it was
Moore. Reset. Oh, you mean Alan Moore.
Alan Moore's complaint. Let
him go with it.
Hold on, I shouldn't have interrupted, because I wanted to picture Roger Moore being mad.
One of Alan Moore's complaints, my understanding is that he didn't like how it was so blatantly...
Let me get another martini and tell you what I didn't like about this film.
Finish, Randy.
I read that Alan Moore didn't like how blatantly this film was about Fox News, which was an American thing and not a British thing. I read that somewhere, and it really stood out for me, because since the movie's come out, we've had the rise of UKIP and the fall of UKIP in England and so on. And a lot of this stuff has come to pass only completely English and not at all, you know, this kind of... this guy's name is Prothero.
Yeah.
He's played very much like somebody was paying attention to Rush Limbaugh and
but sort of propaganda based commentary ish talking head stuff. I mean, that's as old as time. You know, like I don't know.
Oh, for sure.
I don't know if I'd directly connected to it, but I also can see Alan Moore making a stink about it, because he'd come out of his cave with his huge beard and say "F off" a couple times and then go back.
But my point is that one of the things I think we liked about it as Americans was that we could understand the conservative versus liberal stuff.
Absolutely.
And if you look at the book, it's much more fascist versus anarchist.
Yeah.
Yes.
Than conservative versus liberal. And that's just one of those.
I feel appreciated, like the go ahead, Brian.
I sometimes appreciate in my movie, because it's such a short form, I appreciate breaking that stuff down for me as an audience member so I can understand it. But in a book, I like the nuances of a larger discussion. But in a movie, you've only got 2 hours, and if you try to explain that level and then pull comparisons, it's going to get muddled.
Yeah, but also, I don't think this movie steered to... I mean, other than his character and that the propaganda machine that was the government's, it still felt like fascism versus anarchism, or at least activism.
They pull parallels.
Yeah, I don't. I mean, the fact that he was literally a terrorist. He may have been one we agreed with, but he was, you know, he was a terrorist.
Yes. But again, you're looking at it in 2018. Like, it's come to pass in the real world that we have a bit more concern about fascism than we did 15 years ago.
Yeah, part of the reason I think this resonated with me yesterday was because there's just a lot more talk about it.
Holds up.
Yeah, it not only holds up, but it still speaks to... And this is why I think Alan Moore's work transcends decades. All of his work has stuff in it that just it becomes evergreen. Like there, these are issues and stuff that people run into, will run in and out of. It's entertaining on a base level, but if you really look into, you know, Watchmen or this or even The Killing Joke, there's stuff in there that will apply to just straight up life and society probably forever. Like it's,
yeah, it's not just right. 80s. It's not just 90s.
But, no, it's great.
But I see that. I'm just saying you can understand why someone from England who's lived there their whole lives might come to this movie and go, I need this to be more about Margaret Thatcher than Tony Blair.
Right, right.
And like, that's a distinction that means nothing to Americans. So the movie isn't going to do that.
They throw down their corn and they walk out screaming bollocks.
Bollocks! Yeah, bollocks.
I say bollocks.
Bollocks. I'll bet we have British listeners. Write in and tell us how you feel about that. Cause I'm sure you guys have your, speaking of 05 specifically, I'm sure you had your, I guarantee they got shitty commentator people over there.
Oh, absolutely.
I'm sure of it. But how does it compare or whatever? But this idea of looking into the camera and going, England will be the blah, 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 and then repeating it while you're in the shower as if you memorized it. Like, that's just made this guy the most, like, hideous, gross.
I loved it. I loved his portrayal. I loved how he broke down finally, but only at the very end. Like, he was such a, you know, like, he was such a jerk, even facing death. In his shower, like, oh, it was amazing.
Yeah,
I loved
him. By the way, grossest moment of the movie. We may as well get it out of the way. His big barf patty laying next to his head after he died.
Oh, that was crazy. I was like, what is that all about? I was like, okay, cool.
Can I tell you what my guess was?
Yeah, go ahead.
The biography kept in the toilet, the dirty brown water toilet, because even though it was in a little baggie, you know that there's not a sink and soap or anything in there. So she's taking it out of the baggie with her poop water stained hands.
Yeah. That's also her water fountain that she drinks from.
Yeah.
Right, exactly.
Everything about that was gross. You're not wrong.
She goes to bed.
You're not wrong, but by far for me, it's somebody who just had a great big casserole for dinner, and now most of it.
Oh, that's a casserole.
most of it's just laying next to your head now.
It's pretty bad.
Yeah.
Hey, as long as we're all summing up our 13-year-old male minds and being dumb and stupid. Usually on the IMDb, we look for people with really interesting and unique faces.
Who's our winner?
Yeah. Well, actually, it's not their face this time for me. It ended up being Imogene Poots.
Okay.
Because when I saw her name, I chuckled and I said, "What are you, 13?
Oh, yeah. No, we know her from something, don't we?
Yeah.
She's been in lots of things, but she's still her last name remains
Imogene Poots.
That was my second most weird IMDb photo this week. I have to direct your attention to the first, which is a bit actor named Derek Hutchinson. When you look down the full list, make sure you go to the IMDb page for Derek Hutchinson and tell me what in the world is going on in that photo. Because I don't know. Okay. I don't know. Derek, talk to your agent.
All right, I'll check this guy out. Yeah, I know who this girl is. She was in 28 weeks later, not days, but weeks. Yeah, and she's very compelling in that. I didn't. Why didn't I notice that was her as the girl? I'm an idiot.
Nothing wrong with her. Nothing wrong with her name. Wow. Just me for going Poots.
Yeah. That's like you being in class.
I see what you mean about Derek Hutchinson's photo. Like,
it's what the hell?
Like, I'm just going to set up my lava lamp and have my photo taken for this.
And I'm wearing a dress or something, like an off the shoulder top.
Oh, he totally is. A sparkly one, too.
Yeah.
Be from like casual vacancy.
Well, what do you expect from a bureaucrat?
Wait, I can't find this. Where is this? What's his name?
He's just a couple names above Imogene Poots.
She's down there. Okay, hold on.
Just find your Poots and then scroll up.
When you're looking at it in the thumbnail version, it's just a black box. Oh, it's not a picture of a face at all.
Wow.
It definitely looks like a screenshot from a 70s movie. Yeah, right?
It does.
Yeah.
Like he's in the background of like some like Dog Day Afternoon or something.
Right. Yes.
Yeah, that's cool, man. Derek Hutchinson, get in there. Get your people on that, buddy. This is gnarly. All right. Well done there. Hey, you know that domino scene? This is some fun trivia for you. So he tips over those dominoes really just for the one effects. Like, here's my logo.
How does he have time for that?
Yeah.
That's exactly what I was thinking.
Well, when you hear how long it took, you'll really wonder because here's how it went. It involved 22,000 dominoes, and it took professional domino assemblers. Apparently, that's a thing. 200 hours to set it up.
Wow. Yeah,
this
wow.
is why I'm not a big fan of Domino stuff. I like watching it, but I don't want to build it because that's too much
work. You know
work.
What? The, you know what? It only took Hugo Weaving the time of the speech by William Hurt. That's all. John Hurt.
Yeah.
It only, oh, it, you know, like Hugo Weaving is amazing. He set that whole thing up in about 15 minutes. It's amazing.
You know, yeah. I actually have a theory about that because the character V seems to be supernatural. I don't think he sleeps. Mm-hmm. So possibly this is what he does instead of sleeping.
I don't think he's supernatural at all. I think he's just crazy. That's why
superhuman.
I don't think he's superhuman. I think that the
absolutely
how?
Superhuman.
What?
Sure, he's like bouncing around agile like a Black knocking Widow.
Yeah, yeah, knocking people back with a single finger and pushing them across
strong.
The room.
I think he's just strong. I don't think he's superhuman.
Well, that's supernatural.
Eh.
The way he's strong.
I think he's just
is
super
it natural, Scott, or is it supernatural?
He's trained.
Plus, plus he's been so hurt. I don't think he has any feelings, so he's got that power, right? That power
hurt.
Where
yeah.
you
know,
yep.
Bullets
get
hurt.
Yeah, I was kind
get
of
hurt.
Yeah,
I was kind
get
of
hurt.
Disappointed. It was a little bit of a letdown when he takes off the armor after getting shot 100 times
because
I needed. I would have preferred that be the point where you find out that he's actually. Like he's got these you know, like supernatural body. He's not. He doesn't have blood or something. Like it was pretty telegraphed in the film that he doesn't have regular working eyes, and like that was also a moment we could have learned that. But no. They use the armor as an explanation for how he survives the
yeah,
hail
he
of bullets.
All the bullets. He still took a bunch of the bullets in places that weren't armored. But yeah,
right. I think he's like immortal or nothing. I think that they imply that he is stronger than normal. Than the average crazy person.
I think he's just insane. I think he's just insane. And, right. and insanity is whatever you want it to be. So he's got, you know, he's put himself in, he's really
he's
into
practically fireproof.
He's really into flipping eggs and he's really into playing his music jukebox and he's really into that old movie and he's just kind of wacky.
I was going to ask you, did either of you make an Eggy in the Basket after watching this movie?
Because I want one.
I was
so
craving.
Bad.
I was totally craving Eggy in the Basket.
I was too.
What is an egg? Is it just toast?
You take a piece of bread.
Yeah.
You butter both sides. You tear out a hole in the middle and you eat that. You wad it up into a ball and eat it.
I didn't know how to eat it. I didn't know that was part of it. But yeah, go ahead.
And then if you really want to be fancy, use a cookie cutter and get a perfect circle. But I just tear it out. Mm. And then you butter both sides. You put it in a skillet, start cooking it. And as the bread is starting to toast up a little bit, you flip it and then crack an egg into the middle of it. And then you flip it one more time as the egg cooks on that side. And that's your Eggy in a Basket.
That sounds great.
It's awesome.
Oh, it's
wonderful.
It's
the easiest damn thing. You can eat it with your fingers. You don't need a fork.
You got to make sure you get a little salt and pepper
Animal.
On there.
Yeah, I'm into it.
Of course.
No, I'm into it. I'll do that. I can you cook
and
it
a
so
Cinderella.
That I kind of prefer my eggs not runny. Is it possible to cook it long enough that the yolk will harden?
That the yolk will, yeah, absolutely. You cook it low and slow then.
All right.
And
low heat for a longer time.
Okay.
For all of our listeners.
Go ahead.
I'm going to give you the list of names that this thing is also called. So you can raise your hand when you hear the name that you call it in your region. It's also called bullseye eggs, eggs in a frame, egg in a hole. That's where I grew up, egg in a hole. Gas house eggs, hole in one, one-eyed Jack, one-eyed Pete, pirate's eye, Popeye, and I'm not kidding, some people call it spit in the ocean.
Oh, my gosh.
Please make me no.
Well, I know that as a card game, not as a food.
I've never even
Nope. Those are all poker variants, dude.
Yeah, no
right,
kidding.
Yeah, Jack. Right, one-eyed Jack, one-eyed Pete. It's like, it's combo food. Maybe you eat those while you play poker.
Can you make me an egg in the middle of a piece of bread?
Yeah.
That's what I'm going to call
by the way, that's ends Film Sack's cooking show. Right. Thank you for joining us. We'll be back next time when we make a poke in the middle.
Toad in the hole.
Oh, toad in the hole.
That's a different thing.
That's
totally
pretty
different
good.
That's
a
totally
different thing.
Yes.
But I want one.
You do want one?
I want totally a toad. I want a toad right in the hole.
Proper toad in the hole is a casserole that has big sausages in Yorkshire pudding.
Exactly. That's what I said.
Okay.
There you have it then. I like it. What else? In the comic, by the way. We already talked about this. Hey, how about this? In the 1970s, the detective guy in this. What's his name? I don't have the actor's name, but he played the detective, the kind of mopey looking.
Stephen Rea?
Yeah, that guy. Mm-hmm. He acted in the Focus Company in Dublin, Ireland, so he's Irish. again, doesn't bother this less than an Irish guy is playing an Englishman. But anyway, strange. With the...
Well, yeah, he was playing Irish, right?
Because English. He played English in this.
Yeah.
Dude, he's an Irish guy with an English accent.
Stephen Rea is Irish.
Yeah, but
they talked about it in the movie. He said, and they even called him out on it, and they're like considered less than full citizen.
I thought the whole time he's doing an English accent. Did I just hear it?
Well, he may have been doing that, but he was derivative of the Irish.
Oh, all right. Well,
according to the story,
glory be. Anyway, he worked with so this Focus company back in Dublin was like an acting tour. His buddies were exact same class: Gabriel Byrne and Colm Meaney. Kaiser Sose and one of those guys and the guy that made sure Picard beamed where he was supposed to go all the time. That's fantastic.
Because your Picard beam goes where it's supposed to go.
I think that's also an interesting question. You could go around to people who watch TV and movies and say, okay, Stephen Rea, Gabriel Byrne, Colm Meaney, who's the most famous? Who's the one you know? And you're going to get a different answer based on the person.
Sure.
Right.
It's a great example, though, of how famous people lift up their friends. Right? Because that's probably the case here, right? It's not that these...
I don't know. I mean, we knew all three of these guys individually for the things they've done before we knew they were in the same class.
Yeah.
Sure, but I'm just saying, like, they surely had an impact on each other. They surely had, you know, the cross-pollination.
Right. So are they the equivalent of, like, the Brat Pack and that kind of stuff? Is
no,
that what you're
I don't think so.
No, that's not what I'm saying. I'm just saying, like, right. I'm sure that back in the day, when they were 20 years old, I'm sure that Amy Poehler and Tina Fey were on different levels in terms of their trajectory, and one of them kind of lifted the other a little bit on those trajectories.
Sure,
know what I'm saying?
Yeah, I think that's true. But I mean, you know, in the case, like, you always hear about these actors who grew up in the same thing. It's like, oh, well, he's kind of a dick. I won't say James Woods, but he's like, Robert De Niro and so were in the same acting class, and look at him now. You know, like, it happens a lot, but you have to think that there was some, you know, even if it was a competitive
commonality
thing, but
well, you know what I think? I don't think that's all, because there's no such thing as coincidence.
Yeah. There
is definitely a such thing as coincidence. Yeah.
Are you saying you don't believe in fate, Brian Dunaway?
I think it's
I'm just
way
saying
around.
This movie makes a very strong point and beating you over the head. Yeah. Oh, no coincidences.
Yeah. Which there are none. I mean, there are none in this movie, but in life there are tons of them. Mm-hmm. I just had one where I just kicked my toe against my chair and it hurts real bad. That was just
a coincidence. That's not a coincidence. That's
irony.
That's a fact. Yeah.
Is it ironic? All right. Well, there's that. What was I going to say? Now I can't remember.
United as sphincter of Asserica.
No. I'm sorry. I got down this rabbit hole with the anonymous thing because I wanted to see the connections because the Guy Fawkes masks are kind of synonymous with them now.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And
synonymous but anonymous.
And I think to some degree, I know it's not exactly the same, but I think Mr. Robot too when I see those.
Oh, that's totally. They've completely lifted that from Anonymous, no question.
Yeah.
So Anonymous originated in 2003 on a 4chan board, which of course they did, representing the concept of many online and offline community users simultaneously existing in an anarchic digital global brain, they say here. Anonymous members known as Anons, really? Can be distinguished in public by wearing of Guy Fawkes masks in the style portrayed in the graphic novel and film V for Vendetta. However, this may not always be the case as some of the collective prefer instead to cover their face without using well-known masks as a disguise. So some of them might just be like a hoodie and like some sort of drapey thing over their face with eyes cut out. So I went deeper and deeper and I found all this stuff. And basically, it's not that they didn't exist before this. It's that this resonated with them. Like, ooh, yeah, look at the anarchy we're doing, but we should, our front-facing thing. Anyway, point is, it kind of bugs me now, because come up with your own damn mask. You know what I mean?
Oh, like, okay.
I know it's a Guy Fawkes thing, and it transcends time and movies and goes back to 1600s. I understand that, but that's not what they're doing. They're
and
doing
also,
it because they all saw a movie.
Wearing... Right.
It annoys me. It annoys me.
What else are you annoyed by? Are you annoyed by people wearing Jimi Hendrix shirts and stuff? Does that bother you? How about some,
No,
It's that kind of stuff?
No.
A unified front for ideology, maybe?
What's a Jimi Hendrix shirt? What is that?
I don't know. I don't know. I'm thinking of
Che Guevara or Guevara.
Oh, that's a better example. That's actually a better example. I'm going to go with that. No, I wasn't actually thinking of that. I was actually thinking of Bob Marley.
Bob Marley. But people, people lift other.
You know, I'm wearing a Star Wars t-shirt, even though I'm only 14 and I never saw Star Wars in the theaters. Or
I'm wearing my Fat Albert shirt. Ironically, I'm a sex offender.
I
was thinking about this. This movie really raised some interesting thoughts for me about the history of protest and what, how you resist fascism. Right. Mm-hmm. And if you look at it, you see a lot of people wearing masks and especially in, amongst anti-fascists, wearing a mask does two things. One, it protects you a little bit from the overwhelming power of the government you're resisting, right? Because they can't easily identify you. And two, it allows you and all of your cohorts to be somewhat standardized. You're all sort of the same. You're saying, I'm opposing the government, and this guy next to me and I are basically
You're a unified front, sure.
Well, you have to get those masks and you have to get your outfits and so forth from somewhere. Mm-hmm. So typically when you look at protesters wearing masks, you're just looking at whatever they could find at the five and dime. Like it's not, you know what I'm saying? Like,
they have that many of, right? Like, I wanted to go with this mask, but there's only four of them. But if we do Wonder Woman, there's 14. We get 14 there.
It's interesting. I mean, this movie's idea of how to mass produce and distribute masks and hats is pretty off the charts. Considering the entire population walks out there with masks and matching hats and cloaks and and all of that. But who am I to ask?
Idea.
Yeah, he had a whole year. So I don't know who is well, logistics
and
company.
And
he's
got a lot of power. Like, it's not just that he has all the time in the world to do things, but the guy is really talented.
Yeah.
Like the movie just makes it out to be like you say about the domino falling thing. Mm-hmm. He's really talented. He can do anything.
Yeah. How do we feel about that guy is the actor? Why is his name
Hugo Weaving?
Hugo Weaving. I keep wanting to say Guy Ritchie for some reason.
Yeah, that's him.
which is so not at all close. But anyway, I think he's amazing, and he never really got to have his real face on screen. Like, that's a thing you don't ask actors to do unless it's animated or something, you know? Usually.
Right. And I'm trying to remember who, I remember in the trivia, it said who was originally considering that role but didn't want to be behind the mask for the whole thing.
It's interesting because
Sylvester Stallone, Arnold Schwarzenegger.
right.
I think your mind immediately goes to all the names of people who were popular at the time.
Yeah, I wonder
why they just get Keanu Reeves and be done with it. They should just tap him and just tempt him. Yeah,
don't you tempt me.
He's very physical. He's very physical, but the voice would be terrible.
Yeah,
right. And it had to be a voice that really resonates and is a kind of unique, right? Because when he's talking and like he sets up decoys and so forth, you need to be able to hear the difference. I thought Hugo Weaving was amazing in this movie. Like, how is he not one of the most famous people in the world? He was so good.
Yeah. James Purefoy.
Yeah, he was there. This is crazy. He was there, and there are scenes in the movie with him as V. So it says certain scenes within the film were James Purefoy's V, who was originally cast in the role but replaced by Hugo Weaving 4 weeks into filming. Weaving's voice was simply dubbed over Purefoy's performance in post-production. Director James McTeague, however you say it, said in an interview, can I tell the difference? Yeah. Can the audience tell? I doubt it, he says. Yeah, I didn't know.
Could. I know him from The Following. I know him from that Kevin Bacon thing.
I like those guy.
I do too. He was really, really like, he plays a great serial killer in that. But people who watched Rome probably know him better as the guy who played Mark Antony.
Yeah, he was a butthole in that. But I liked him in it. And he was in something I just watched. Altered Carbon. He's a bad guy in Altered Carbon. He's great in that.
It's really a question of where you watch Rome.
Yeah.
And I say Rome where you want to.
Nice. Well done.
Rome around the world?
Yeah, Rome around the world.
That's what I say.
Yeah, that's what you say. Yeah, no, he was in Altered Carbon. He played that rich dude that he's just a little puffy in that, so he looks different. But
puffy. He's retaining a little water in that one.
A little bit. I mean, he's just different than the Rome character. The Rome character is pretty buff. But anyway, that guy's great. And that's a little weird they didn't use him. He seems like he would have been just as good as anybody else. Mm-hmm. And probably was for 4 weeks.
Yeah.
I mean, who knows what happened with him? But anyway, movie good.
I agree.
We haven't seen a good movie in a while. This is really liked it. I want to see it again. I liked it.
It was good. And the only problem, like I said, for me, the only problem was the just quickly running past certain things that didn't make sense to my mind, even though I knew what they were. Sometimes it took me a few minutes to put them together, like and try to figure out if they had any special meaning or if they were just supposed to be common words. Like there was one time when they were talking about how taxes were the true way to, you know, for accurate investigation into what was going on. And the guy said, oh, yeah, I went down to the cold vault. And I'm like, what's the cold vault? Is it cold? Am I supposed to understand what a cold vault is? Why is it not in the regular vault? Is a cold vault some kind of super secret vault that is kept and that's what they call it? And is it supposed to mean something more? So Scott says I should turn my brain on. I think the problem was I had my brain turned on and I was trying to put things together that weren't there simply because I didn't know what a lot of the language necessarily meant.
Yeah.
Even like bollocks. I've heard bollocks a million times. And finally I got so sick of hearing this movie. I'm like, what the hell are bollocks?
They're testicles.
Well, yeah. I'm like, oh, it goes in the scrote bag. I got you.
Yeah.
I'm with you.
It's like us and saying like, balls or whatever.
Yeah. So
sure.
By the way, they really like the word bollocks.
Oh, they're into it. Yeah. No,
yeah. Rated B for bollocks is what I was going to go.
Well, I mean, you know, look, the writing, Alan Moore's British, David Lloyd's British.
Right.
This is a British
comic.
Nothing
wrong with that.
Yeah, no, this is not a suggestion that there's anything wrong with it.
Right.
But I think I appreciate that they didn't try to Americanize things too much, you know? I don't need that in my life. It's fine. Give me your weirdisms. I'll make sense of them. It'll take a little while. Dunaway may have to watch that intro 15 times, but it's fine. We'll work it out.
I did. And like I
He'll
said,
get it after the 16th.
Yeah. All right. It's fine.
I turned on closed caption. Like I said, I turned on, like the third time I rewound, I was like, forget it. Turn on closed caption. I don't
had to do
like
that with
it.
Peaky Blinders. I don't fault anybody for having to turn on, for somebody actually speaking English, watching an English thing, still having to have, subtitles turned down. I can't fault.
Oh yeah, I hated Trainspotting in the theater, and once I got to watch it at home with subtitles, it was a lot easier to understand.
I don't know why especially
Bagby, man.
Yeah, Bagby. I'll give you him, I guess. But he was supposed to be hard to understand, right? Like that was his whole thing.
Yeah, it's like watching Snatch and trying to figure out what Brad Pitt is saying.
See, there's another one that bugs me a little bit that it's Brad Pitt playing this very Irish gypsy man.
Right. You know, I'm all right with it.
It's a good performance. I'm just saying why I have this thing against American actors doing foreign accents. I don't know why that bothers me, and it doesn't the other way.
It embarrasses you because you can't. All you can imagine is, oh, they're really butchering that. You know, they're butchering it.
I don't know. They make me, I don't know what it is. It's like a U.S. guilt thing. It's like.
Sure. It should be. It's totally stunt casting. It's just stunt casting.
Yeah. Right. I mean, but then I don't call it stunt casting the other way around. I'm not calling Tom Holland a stunt cast for Spider-Man or even the guy before him.
Because he wasn't
famous beforehand.
Well, no.
Do British people, though, call it stunt casting, right? Like, I mean, if we...
No, they call it bollocks casting. I don't know. That's something I'll never get. Cold vault.
If it's because we're American and we're watching an American actress affect a British accent, do British people have the same problem when they watch a British actor sound American in a British film?
Maybe, you know? but if they, it's weird because, okay, yes.
Or are we just so damn oversensitive that we can't handle it?
I think there's a little of that going on, at least for me. If I'm being as honest as I possibly can,
I think part of it is just weird.
It's like, you know, you feel guilty for the acts of other people. Also, Hollywood is the seat of power for film. Like, that's just straight up true. So if one of our guys ends up in something that should be otherwise foreign, like Michael C. Hall is in this new show on Netflix about a British neighborhood that's supposed to be safe, but then bad things happen there. It's called Safe. And he's playing British. And so I went, oh, maybe he is British. And I didn't know. I look it up. No, he's born in freaking New Jersey or somewhere. Like, why is he in there? But then I would never say this about, and I don't, and Randy, to your point that they're unheard ofs before, I don't think so. Like, I knew who Christian Bale was before he came over and played Batman. I know who freaking.
Yes, but we use the phrase stunt casting to describe when someone is ludicrously famous and in a casting, they're cast in a role where you're like, they could have probably found someone better. Yeah,
like Kevin Costner as Robin Hood is a great example of that. Yeah. And I hate that. Like, it's annoying. And I like Kevin Costner.
Well,
I'm
the problem
a big fan.
Is that he was just not very good at it. I think the fact that Natalie Portman is good at it, the fact that Tom Holland is good at it, for me, makes it a lot more acceptable. It's when they're not good at it. It is really more distracting to the film than it is, oh, wow.
I look forward to us being able to sack Robin Hood, because I loved that movie back in the day. It was probably because of the soundtrack, but I remember just loving it. And I was so much younger then, and it just,
everything I do it for you.
I'm sure it's trash at this point. I'm sure I'll look at it and be embarrassed, but I want to find out.
That's when I knew. That's when I knew that Bryan Adams was no longer a thing I wanted to be into.
Oh, I still loved it. But I loved it back in the day, man.
I did too. I'm not gonna lie. I liked it a lot, and I think it would be perfect sack. I know we've had it on a list, and it just always seems to disappear or never show up. But we need to get to that one at some point. All right, clips. I have clips. Let's get these clips out here. Here, for example, is a clip. This is. Oh, gosh. That's Ving Rhames. That's not what I'm looking for. Okay, here it is. This is the Alex Jones sounding guy.
It wasn't the war they started. It wasn't the plague they created. It was judgment. No one escapes their past. No one escapes judgment. You think he's not up there? You think he's not watching over this country? How else can you explain it?
Yeah, basically foreshadowing that he, a former general in that shit war they fought, would get his judgment. But it was good. I liked when he died, except for the bar.
And I would have said the Piers Morgan of this movie.
Yeah, there you go. That's a good comparison.
Yeah. Oh yeah, all right. I hate Piers Morgan. Oh my gosh.
Of course you do. Mm-hmm. He's a horrible human being.
Awful.
You're meant to hate him, by the way. I think that's
it's by design.
Yeah.
Here's, I don't know what it says.
I can assure you I mean you no harm.
Who are you?
Who is but the form following the function of what, and what I am is a man in a mask.
Well, I can see that.
Of course you can. I'm not questioning your powers of observation. I'm merely remarking upon the paradox of asking a masked man who he is.
Here's some of that. That's some of that hard dialogue there, Dunaway.
I actually was okay with that. That dialogue actually made sense. Why don't you get into the vicariously as both victim and villain by the vicarious to the fade and visage, no mere veneer of vanity and a visage of its populace. I'm like, shut up! Then vivified, vexified.
I thought that was very cool. Like, you didn't have to follow every single word.
Agree to agree that you're wrong.
Well, look, it's very alliterative and fun. Like, it rolls off the tongue, but if you're trying to make sense of it, I sort of get where you're coming from.
He is the Zorro of 2000s England, isn't he?
Yeah.
Right?
Kind of, yeah. Yeah. Except he's blowing more shit up than saving people. But whatever.
Well, sure.
Brian, this is your prom date said this.
Oh, good. We're back to my prom.
Yeah, this is about an hour into the date, so here's what she said.
Are you like a crazy person?
There you go. That's that.
See, I had to rewind that too. Like, what did she say?
Are you a crazy person? I didn't have any trouble with understanding all the words. I think
Do it again.
You know what it is? Some people hear Southern people and say this. They go, I don't know what he said. What did he say? Like, I think you just haven't heard it. We got to get more English movies in here because none of these were hard for. There was never a word someone said where I didn't go, what? What?
I'll be the first to tell you that I don't watch a lot of English movies. Now I've watched plenty of Doctor Who and British TV shows and comedies, but they're very talkative. Their talk is not super fast. It's, here, beat, 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 beat. Whereas this had like a bunch of, I'm mumbling and I'm talking down here.
I could see that. I could see that. Like, it's a different, it's just like here, we will have a different dialect depending on what part of the country you're from. Over there, it's true. Like, the Northerners have a very different accent. I find their accent charming. Terpster thinks it's annoying, but he lives there, so he has a different feeling about it. Like, these are regional accents that are a little more Cockney, a little more, out of the mainstream. You like when the Queen talks is what you like. You like a hello.
I didn't say, no, not really.
I like when Adele talks.
Yeah.
It's not a matter of whether I like it or not. It's right. a matter of whether I can understand it.
I understand.
If I can understand it, I'm cool with it. Sure. And it's just like I said, it's me.
No, I know. It's all good. I like this. Is a good discussion, though. All right, here's the next little bit.
Remember the 5th of November, the gunpowder treason and plot. I know of no reason why the gunpowder treason should ever be forgot.
It's pretty good, Hugo. It's pretty good, mm-hmm. dude. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
I like him. The elf queen or the elf king wins Liver. Again.
Mr. Anders.
I can taste it on your skin.
I have a question for you guys.
Yeah.
Sure.
Did you know before me saying it just right now that you're not allowed to touch the queen? Like shake hands.
I did know that. There was
I just assumed it.
Well,
I didn't know it. I'm just like, don't touch her. No,
I know it from there was some recent thing where a rock star or somebody was visiting and reached out and grabbed her elbow or something.
Reached out and grabbed her boob.
Really? Yeah. Oh. And they were like, there was a big freak out about it. She didn't really freak out, but all her people right. were like, oh no, we've touched the queen.
Nobody touches the queen.
Destroy him.
Bollocks.
Yeah, I don't. But I did know. I kind of knew that. And I think maybe the Claire Foy show kind of gets into that a little bit. The crown.
Maybe.
I think there's a scene or two. Well,
we can't call it the Claire Foy show anymore because she's done after yeah. the most recent season.
We're moving on to
There's a new queen. Long live the queen.
Yep. She's not playing this. She's older though, right? In this new one.
Is yes.
The idea. Yeah.
That's how it works.
who's playing? Well, my point was they're not just replacing the actress and staying with the current storyline.
No, yeah, it's a new. You move to another. Another important period in the queen's life, and then we'll have there are three all together, so it'll be 6 seasons, 2 seasons for each.
And Matt Smith is out, right? He's not.
Yes, he's out.
Okay.
Yes.
Wonder who's gonna. So
I just wanted to say there are a lot of Americans who didn't know that you don't shake hands with the queen. There probably are like handlers now telling Americans when they meet her, don't touch the queen. And I have decided I'm going to touch one of these royals. In my lifetime. I am going to walk up to and put my hand on a royal. I'm going to find a way because I have no regard whatsoever for their station.
Your best
off with his hand.
Your best chance would have been Prince Harry before this marriage because he goes to Vegas all the time or did and was a big party dude. And so you could have probably slapped him at the win or something. Just seen him on there.
Give him one of those big old Texas back slaps.
Grab him in the
Howdy.
Butt. Yeah, you could have done that, but now he's all settled down. So can't even touch the ginger. just kidding. No offense to gingers.
No, you're not.
Some of my best friends are gingers. All right, what are we doing here? Oh, this guy. What's this government? Oh, okay. Anyway, here's this.
People should not be afraid of their governments. Governments should be afraid of their people.
Yeah, I agree.
Yeah, I like that line a lot.
Kind of agree.
Mm-hmm. T-shirts made of that.
Yeah. Here's the gross priest guy. So here's that.
Tell me your sins.
Oh, he's so gross, dude. I hate that guy. Ugh.
Oh, yeah. That whole scene. They did everything. The lighting, the set design, right? Everything was gross.
I always feel bad when they have to ask some old venerable stage actor. I don't know that guy, but I'm sure he's, you know, he's one of those guys, been around forever. In his 70s or something. Hey, could you come in here and be a rapist, pervert, priest man?
Like, I would love to.
He now actually has to go around to all the other studios and introduce himself as a sexual predator.
Right. He's on the church rectory list or whatever.
That's right, exactly.
All right, he is so good in this, so let's see what I thought I meant.
Any discussion of this document or its contents will be regarded at the very least as an act of sedition, if not a willful act of treason.
So good. I miss that guy. Shouldn't have died. Shouldn't have died. You know what should have happened to him, to John Hurt? When he died, he should have laid back and a small alien version of him should have burst from his chest and then grown up to be another John Hurt. That's what should have happened.
By the way, really, really great trope on that character in the end.
Oh, let me push the trope button. By the way, just so everyone knows, there's some people like, Scott, what are you talking about? He's the guy... in Alien, the first alien with the alien popping out of his chest after breakfast or lunch or whatever.
No one asked that.
Someone somewhere did. I guarantee
it. Well, they could Google it. Come on now.
The kids today. What am I pushing? This.
That villain is really a coward. Man, in the end, he is weeping and shaking. It is like everything about this villain gets completely turned inside out when he comes to face his.
I feel like every political hothead blubber butt anywhere in the world. If you take them out someplace where they're on the ground, their hands are tied, and there's a gun to their head, they're all blubbering weenies. All of them. There's no stoicism. Not one of those big mouth, fat ass buttholes that would get up on a microphone and say shit now. Not one of them would sit there stoically and go, I die for my country. No way. They'd go, please let me do it. I have the best begging for mercy. The best.
Anybody got a favorite example from a movie of a villain who turns out to be a coward in the end?
Begging for mercy.
Oh wow.
Mine is Prince Humperdinck when he finally realizes.
Oh
that,
yeah, that was a good one.
He runs away. He's like, yeah. they're finally gonna fight. Nope, off he goes.
Wait, Prince Humperdinck.
The
Princess Bride.
Oh, duh.
Oh my God.
I forgot. Sorry, that's bad on me. I feel like
Monday Ibbit. Let's do kind of Princess Bride trivia.
Oh no, don't. I'm really bad.
I'm not gonna be around Monday. Can we count Alan Rickman doing? Oh God, please don't kill me. Oh, you're one of them.
No, because he's faking it. He faked
it. That still is my favorite.
It's still pretty good. Bill Clay.
I'm going to stave off a few emails. Ian Holm played Ash. John Hurt played Kane in Alien.
Oh, right. The names. I forgot the names. But yeah, Kane. He was the first one to die. He was your first guy to go. Yep.
Right, sure.
And I love him.
That's why you don't look into the top of an alien egg.
That's right. He's good in the Hellboy movie. I don't know if he was in the second one or not, but he's in the first one. No, he died in the first one. The character did. Oh, spoiler. Anyway, John Hurt. He's awesome. You will find there are a few actors who deftly dance between the serious and the genre films. Not that they can't be serious, but you know what I mean? Like movies that are about zombies or superheroes or whatever. There are a few actors that can really pull that off, especially older actors. And he's one of them. Ian Magneto, man, he's one of them.
Oh, Ian McKellen.
Yeah,
sure.
I think Picard's one of those. Like you could have.
I think Ian Holm. We were talking.
Ian Holm's great. Yeah, he was great in Fifth Element.
Goofy, bumbling priest in Fifth Element, and sadistic robot android in Alien.
Yeah, and then a whole bunch of like serious, straight up mm-hmm. sort of drama stuff in Britain and stage.
Then a silly Hobbit.
Yeah, and then a Hobbit. You're like, I love that. I love that those guys will do that. It's really cool. All right, what's this? I don't know. Here it is.
Take off your mask. No.
Oh, I just like that. No.
You take off your mask.
You take yours
off. It's not a
mask. Off.
What?
Oh, your face is ugly then. What an ugly mask. Right.
Oh, wow.
Oh, wow.
I'm Dr. Doom.
Here he is again saying something dumb. Here you go.
You've got nothing. Nothing but your bloody knives and your fancy karate gimmicks.
I like that. That killed me. Fancy karate gimmicks.
You know that's going to follow. You know you're going to get kicked in the face with some karate kicks when you do that.
Ain't got no time for that, as they would say. Well, all right, that's your clips, and that means it's time for this. Just got this card here. I don't know. They started putting them on cards. Crazy. These are the film sack checklist, and I start with this one. Some mask and hat company made a lot of money. Check. Mm-hmm. Someone had to clean out that shower barf. Check. And finally, I'll bet V's mask smells like beef. Check.
Beef. Okay. Smells like eggy in the basket.
Yeah. Wow. Nice. There you go. That makes more sense.
Does he push it through that little hole when he wants to eat? Yeah.
Is to cram it through there like one of those Play-Doh machines.
Like a little fax machine.
Yeah. Right.
First, that's I like amazing. To suck out the yolk.
I would love it if he had a real decorative straw.
I like that. Yeah. It had to be a flat one, though, like the kind you get at the coffee places, the little red flat style. Yeah.
Shaped like the mouth of the mask.
I like that a lot.
It's all decorated.
Mm-hmm. I like that a lot. Speaking of genres, Trek stuff. These are Star Trek connections. There's a couple of them. We got, actually, it's just one. Sorry. Drew Solodzuk is his name. He was a DMR editor for the IMAX version. And then in Star Trek 2009, he was the DMR editor for the IMAX version. So they hired him for the same job?
It's like his job.
Yeah, his literal job. Well done.
Absolutely
there.
Absolutely shocked in the last 20 years that Stephen Fry has never been asked to make an appearance on Star Trek anything.
I agree.
Yeah, that's a good point.
I love Stephen Fry.
Seems like, yeah.
Also, his kidnapping, his whole thing there, really effective, I thought. Just really, because he thought what we all, I mean, there was just something about this idea that sometimes the way you create safety and or create power, shifting the power differential is you do a thing in public that would be so public and so, you know, everyone's laughing at your TV show you made, mm-hmm. that puts you in a place of untouchableness because...
Right.
That's just the assumption or
they
whatever.
They kill you, become a martyr kind of thing.
Yeah. Right, and then there they are that night. Like,
mm-hmm. they're like, we don't care.
And they tore him up, man. Like, that was really effective, I thought. Really
he actually said, when asked what he thought about being in the movie, he said he loved the role because he got to take a club to the face. And that was like his favorite thing as an actor was finally getting to take a club to the face.
Plus to kind of reproduce the scene with her mother. But in this case, she held her tongue and didn't say anything. So she, that was all just real good. I thought that was really well handled. And also, I wish he would have said, "Now they're going to take you," but he didn't do that. And that's
too bad. I did think about that a couple of times when she kept going right to bed. Yeah. Stop hugging the bed.
Anytime anyone's under a bed, I just think of that Taken movie.
I have a particular set of nudie photographs.
All right. Well, hey, soundtrack great. I gave it an R for rad. I thought it was good. Pretty good. I don't know who did it, but it's a good soundtrack.
Yeah. It's super jarring when you flip back to old March music, from 100 years ago, or 200 years ago, but not like not jarring in a bad way, right? Mm-hmm. Like
that's meant to be. It's like, whoa, what's going on now? The speakers are playing. It's like that scene where Andy Dufresne locked himself in the record room and started playing music over the speakers at the prison, and the warden got all pissed. It's kind of like that. Nobody controls the airways. Oh, you can't shut down the signal. Like, there's a really awesome feeling to that, and the music punctuated it.
That I didn't want to be annoyed by something very simple that happens occasionally. It's when someone requests that other people take notice with one sense when it's the other sense that is being stimulated. So there's a girl, when the music starts at one point, she goes, "Come look, they're playing music outside." I'm like, "You can't see the music. Come listen.
Come to the window and look." Yeah.
Yeah. Look at the speaker that is playing the music for your ear to hear. Yeah.
I don't know why that bothers me, but
I noticed that too.
Every time.
It's like Aykroyd saying, "Listen, you smell something?"
Yeah.
I actually kind of like that. Mm-hmm. Oh, you know what? You don't even have to say. All you had to say was Aykroyd, and I want to watch Gross Point Blank. That's all you had to say. I love that movie. All right, let's get to the Twitter post. This is where you guys, in 280 characters or less, sum this damn thing up in those characters or less. Let's start with Randy.
V for Vendetta, a vehicle in which the villain with a visage visits violence upon the very vanguard of vice. My verdict? Valuable video. Voila.
Nice.
Nice job. And you reminded a whole bunch of dumb people that voila is not spelled with a W. Good job.
Viola.
I'm just teasing dumb people. You're fine.
they didn't understand anyway.
No, they're not even listening. They don't get it.
Are you talking about me?
Also, this is all just a veiled way for me to communicate with Dunaway. Just kidding. Speaking of him, hey, it's Brian Dunaway's turn.
Oh, V for Vendetta. Wonderful. It's a game I've never played. What a remarkable mind you have. # bag of bollocks.
It is, yeah.
Bollocks. So good.
Bollocks. Wonderful. It's a game I've never played.
Ricky,
what a remarkable mind you have.
Ricky Gervais says bollocks all the time. That's where I get my bollocks allotment. Was when I listen to him.
Bollocks, Phil. Wow, I almost did my Ricky Gervais impression. You didn't want that.
No, I don't want to hear it. I don't want to hear it.
Bring
also,
it.
I hear his, I can't bring myself to watch this new stand-up on Netflix as I hear it's just really annoying. Someone told me.
Oh, really?
Yeah, like he's in this, at the stage of his career where he's at the place where even Stephen Merchant won't work with him anymore. He's just so full of himself or something, and it really comes across as what people told me. I've not seen it, so I can't really judge. I'm just saying what the record is.
Have they never seen Ricky Gervais? Right? Yeah, that's his thing. That's his whole, it's like saying Andrew Dice Clay, I can't believe he made a chauvinistic remark.
It's not that. It's more like, I don't know. Like when you're a bumbling, what's that, George Michael? What's this character in The Office?
I don't think he's changed.
Ricky or David? David Brent. David Brent. That's it. David Brent.
I don't think names.
When you're that, it's fine. But when you're like, I don't know.
I don't think he's changed. I think we've changed. I think we don't want that right now.
So, guys, speaking of, did anybody watch the remixed fourth season of Arrested Development?
No. Oh, that's out now.
I didn't see the trailer for 5.
Yes, it is out now. You should watch it. It's so much better.
Yeah,
than
that's
the
what
fourth
I've heard.
Used to be.
I heard this whole, what's his name? Mitchell. The guy who runs that show, he was talking about it, and I went, oh, that's interesting. And then a whole bunch of people were like, dude, this is, why didn't they do this in the first? Like, it's
and that's available on Netflix, the remixed version?
Okay. Yeah. Remixed fourth season. They got a bunch of new Ron Howard narration to make sense of how it flows now.
Yeah.
And they also have, like, they used a bunch of, like, shots from previous episodes. It is so good. Like, it totally fixes my problem. I'm now super excited about the fifth season.
Oh, I can't wait. Cool.
I'm adding that to my list because that was the problem I had with Arrested Development.
It's a problem everyone's had, and it's unfortunate because it was all them working around schedules. It was them saying, well, all right, I guess we can make this work if we do this weird breakup. And I appreciate the ingenuity. It just can't work in that show. You know, it's an ensemble thing where they all got to be there. You can't do this separate stuff. And then some people are green screened in you just can't. And so I think they've realized that now, but they were trying to make that fourth season when all of those actors had other shit to do, and it just made it hard. So I totally get it.
I also read that one of the linchpins to making the fourth and fifth season happen was Michael Cera. He's the guy who went around and asked people to do this and tried to, you know, try to fund the action. Like, that's really cool. I would have never guessed of all of them that Michael Cera was
be the
right.
Yeah, he probably sees it as his formative time, you know, or probably, had a good enough experience to feel that way anyway, which is awesome.
You'd be funny as if I could do my Twitter post.
Oh, yeah.
Hey. Did you not do yours?
And now Brian Ibbett with his Twitter post.
And it's funny because this is actually not even my Twitter post. This is the intro that Tina wrote for me to use for FilmSack.
Nice.
So here's what she says. So here's the way to get a hot chick to kiss you. You creep her out while saving her from getting mugged in a dark alley, lock her in your house for a year, and then shave her head.
Yeah. I like it. I kept drawing parallels between that and Beauty and the Beast. I'm like, is that the only way the French people know how to get a dame?
I guess.
Lock them up in a tower somewhere?
Get a dame.
Yeah.
Their version of Silence of the Lambs ends with a very different story.
Yeah. As long as it doesn't have that scene where she's walking through there and somebody throws something at her. I still can't deal with that. You know what I'm talking about? I can't.
What did they throw, Scott? What was it? What did he throw?
It was a man's sperm, if you
what
must
was
know.
It?
But a man's.
Yeah, man. No, yes, the much mysterious men's sperm. I hate that movie because of that. Anyway, what are we doing here? Oh, look at this, guys. Oh my gosh, it's right here. Check us out. Hold on. There we go. All right. They almost had two other names for this movie. These are the alternate titles, also on a card. Here's number one, B for Bedwetta. That's stupid.
Oh no, that's hysterical.
No, it's Bedwetta.
That's
whatever.
like the Donald Trump porn film version.
Yeah, that's pretty good. And then then you got Z for Zenyatta. If you're an Overwatch fan, that's a funny one. Hey, got an email from Brian Mission, who wrote in and says, thanks for all the work you're doing, reviewing the good and the bad and the streaming. I highly recommend that you guys watch Iron Sky. Actually, Good, the Bad, and the Streaming is a great podcast name.
I like it.
Mm-hmm. Right? Yeah. Really, but it's basically what we're doing, so don't take it. Anyway, the premise is that during World War II, this is Iron Sky, the Nazis launched troops, scientists, and civilians to the moon to create a research colony. Many years later, they have created high-tech weaponry with the intent of attacking the Earth. Don't knock it until you try it. If you're willing to watch Death Race 2050, you will get far more enjoyment and full conversation out of Iron Sky. Thanks again for all the great work, Brian. See, that sounds amazing. Sounds amazing.
Iron Sky was great in Say Anything. She was just a delight to watch.
Iron Sky.
I told y'all we shouldn't have watched Death Race 2050. See the influx of crap we got to watch now? Thanks a lot.
Wait, Iron Sky. Let's see. Is it streaming?
It sounds like Iron Sky. Is it streaming anywhere?
We've talked about this before, actually. It's the last time we saw it, it actually, I believe it was on Netflix last time we discussed watching it.
Was it? It is on Hulu and Amazon Prime.
Oh, we, that's two out of three is pretty good. We should do that.
Yeah.
We should do that.
It's two out of three. What'd you say?
Arumsky.
I'm saying two out of three services are streaming it. I think we have to.
No. Oh, I thought you had, I said a rating two out of three.
No.
System is that?
That's pretty bad. A two out of three. Like a one is the worst, three is the best. What the hell is a two?
Right. Does this actually have a Sarah Palin? I mean, I'm looking at the poster and it looks like there's a Sarah Palin styled president in this.
I don't know, but I got a question. Is this subtitle? Because I'm seeing us a Finnish movie. It's Finland, right? It's 2012.
Yeah.
I can't even handle almost English.
Well, wait a minute. You just told us you watched V for a Vendetta with subtitles. You don't have a problem with subtitles.
Okay. Yeah. I don't have a problem with subtitles.
Yeah. You could do subtitles, but it's, I don't think this is subtitles. I don't know if this is English or not. I can't tell. How do you tell? That's important for me from a clip standpoint.
No, it's English. It's spoken English.
Is it?
Yeah.
All right. I'm in. I'm all in. Mm-hmm. This sounds amazing.
Everybody just talks like this.
You guys, the Nazis are back. The whole sky is iron.
Oh, I love this, the trailer or whatever, the setup, this 2 minute 40 thing that's on Just Watch looks really, really good. I'm all in.
Definitely put this on the list. Yeah, we should get this in there. In fact, I don't know, this sounds better than Lethal Weapon 3 to me. I mean,
but let's talk about what we're watching next week.
Yeah, Scott? What are we watching? Oh, Lethal Weapon 3 next week.
Next week, we're going to watch The Ice Pirates.
Oh, what? That's right. I thought you said it was gone.
We're going to watch the 1984 movie, right. The Ice Pirates.
Yeah, right. That means that Dunaway, you got to do your magic on that so we can get
it. Absolutely. So, I've already done it.
All right, great.
Look around for The Ice Pirates. We're talking about a movie that stars Robert Urich and Mary Crosby. It also includes Angelica Houston, Ron Perlman, and one of the Carradines. Does it really matter which Carradine?
Never matters which Carradine, really. Think about it.
And you can, if you can't find it, you can rent it on Amazon for $3.99 or Vudu for $2. I mean, you'll be able to find it easily. I like you call him Robert Urich.
Urukai. He's the ones that you paint and they come out of the mud and then they fight better than the orcs. Anyway. So there you go. It's I thought that's good. I'm excited now, actually.
John Matuszak. It's a sloth, isn't it?
Yeah. Isn't it?
Yeah. I think he's sloth.
Yeah, totally.
Baby Ruth.
I have not seen Ice Pirates since I was a wee child. So
a wee lass. Wow.
This is exciting.
Bruce Valanche. Look at this. Look at this cast list.
Yeah, Bruce Valanche. He's not just in a square now, Brian. He's doing other stuff. So anyway.
I'm just saying, get your hopes down for some of the people you've heard of that are way down the cast.
Yeah.
These are bit roles.
Now, this is important to note. This just left streaming, and that kind of puts some people out in the dark. However, the reason we're still doing it, we were going to do it anyway because it was streaming. We're going to keep doing it because a fan sent us copies. So we were going to kind of go, oh, well, now it's streaming. That's even easier for listeners. Plus, we have these hard copies. We're still going to do it because I hate when people send us stuff and we don't use them. So we're going to try to make sure we use everything we get. So Ice Pirates, a classic, 80s classic, comes to life in 2018 next week here on FilmSack. All right. I think it's everything. FilmSack.com is our website. And you can find us via email, FilmSack@gmail.com. Be like Brian Mission and send us your messages, FilmSack@gmail.com. And finally, on Twitter, you can find us at FilmSack. Don't forget you can rate us wherever you get your podcasts. That helps us in lots of ways and spreads the word about the show. That twill do it for us, for me, for Brian, and for Randy.
Bollocks.
We'll see you next time.
Bollocks.
Testicles. This show is part of the Frog Pants Network.
Frog Pants Network.
Get more shows like this at frogpants.com.